Hello to everybody who knows about New Jersey's Franklin Mine off the top of your head. It's Beautiful Anonymous. 1 hour. One phone call. No names. No holds barred.
I'd rather go one-on-one. I think it'll be more fun. And I'll get to know you. And you'll get to know me.
Hi, everybody. It's Chris Gethard. And I hope you're having a good day. Hope you've considered signing up for bonus content at beautifulanonymous.com. And I understand that not everybody enjoys a lengthier intro. This one's not the longest in the world. If you skip about 5.5-6 minutes, you'll be right towards the end of it. And it'll pick up right at the phone call. It's a phone call I'm so psyched for you to hear. And I hope you enjoy it. Hello, everybody. Chris Gethard here. Welcome to another episode of Beautiful Anonymous. As always, I feel so lucky to be here. I feel so lucky to put this show out into the world. Feel so lucky that you're touching base with the show, and I hope you get something out of it. Have to say, there's so many different categories of shows that Beautiful Anonymous episodes have fit into over the years, and that makes sense because we don't really set any sort of content restrictions, and we've done almost 500 episodes. So yeah, they've gone in a lot of different directions. But one category that I've always been a huge fan of personally, if you put the screws to me and said, what's your favorite genre that shows up consistently in Beautiful Anonymous? I've often said people with very unique jobs and specific jobs have always floated my boat. This episode is one of the ultimate examples of that. I'm going to talk more about that in a minute. Tell you what it is, what's going on with it. But first, I do just have to say, as always, thanks to everybody who has signed up at beautifulanonymous.com. I like to give the updates each week on where we are at. And drum roll, please, there hasn't been much movement since we last touched base. We are currently at 739 people who are getting 20 minutes of extra bonus content a week, plus people at the upper tier getting a monthly phone number that's just for them, a follow-up call with a past caller. We try to make it cheap, especially if you buy one of the annual plans. It's real good bang for the buck. Go ahead and check it out. And also, thanks to everybody who's expressed excitement about the fact that Andrea and I are going to attempt to make Beautiful Anonymous the magazine. We need your contributions. You can send anything in the mail. We've had some questions come up. People want to know, like, hey, where can I send digital versions of stuff? That is not what this is. Beautiful Anonymous prides itself on its use of slightly antiquated technology. Hour-long phone calls? People don't have those anymore. Well, we do. Using the U.S. Postal Service exclusively for this project? That's right. I'm not going to print it out for you. You print it out and you send it to me, and then I'll think about including it in our magazine if that magazine should ever come to be someday. It's a very fun experiment. P.O. Box 972. New Vernon, New Jersey, 07976. Send it to me, Chris Gethard, at P.O. Box 972, New Vernon, New Jersey, 07976. People are asking questions like, can we send stories? Yeah, send them. People are going, are there length restrictions? I go, not really, but if it's like 10 pages long, I probably can't dedicate 10 pages of magazine just to your story. Try to keep it tight. People are like, can I send artwork? Yeah, absolutely. Photos? Yeah. Send whatever. Send me the weirdest thing you can think to send in the mail, and I'll figure out a way to include it in this magazine. And we've also got to thank, there have been people who have reached out who have said that they have helped publish fanzines before, people who work at print shops who have offered to help give us advice and let us know how to do this without breaking the bank. And I just have to say thanks to all of you. And it's really appreciated. And I know Andrea's received some messages over on social media, Instagram DMs and whatnot. And we will probably be taking you up on all that advice and knowledge when this comes to pass someday. So thanks to everybody who's been getting excited and sending stuff in. Now, this week's episode, buckle up, buckle up. I have a feeling for some people, this one might feel like, it's not my thing. It's not a topic I love. And then there's going to be some people going, this is why I love this show, man. Because it gives me glimpses into corners of the world that I'm theoretically aware that they exist, but I never thought I'd ever hear somebody speak about it for an hour. Our caller is a scientist by academic background and also has student debts and talks about how those student debts meant that the science had to be applied to something that could make some money. And we're going to see how an interest in science might show up in the world of mining. And mining, I've always been fascinated by. If I can just be a nerd for a second and just say, you look at a documentary like Harlan County, USA, which if you're somebody who gets nerdy about documentaries, it's often listed at the very top of the heap of the best documentaries ever. It's about a labor strike in mines in Appalachia, and you see the whole history of the labor movement. You see industry. You see industriousness. You see the sort of go west and strike it rich attitude that America has long been defined by. You see people dominating nature. You see the human cost of capitalism. There's so many stories that go along with mining that I've always been so fascinated by. And here's our caller in 2024 who is on the science side of things in the mining industry and telling us about ways in which it's fascinating, how one gets to be a part of it, ways in which it's standard for him, but that I sit here and go, that is a life that not many of us would sign up for, or that it would take great getting used to. It's a really, really cool, laid-back conversation with this caller who you'll see from the start. I found him to be quietly so funny from the jump, and he had so much to say about this very unique life. And as always, I'm not looking to shill it too hard, but we get to hear even more about random topics in the bonus content and a really incredible stretch about a trip to Argentina and the geologic phenomenon he saw there, where I'm telling you the answer is so long lengthwise, but flies by. And Andrea and I both typed to each other. I typed the words, I could listen to this guy talk about these ripples all day. And she wrote back instantly and said, I was just about to type the same thing. It's beautiful. You can find it at beautifulanonymous.com. Thanks to everybody who has signed up. In the meantime, enjoy this phone call, and I thank you, caller, for calling in and giving us this glimpse into the world of borehole geophysics.
Thank you for calling Beautiful Anonymous. A beeping noise will indicate when you are on the show with the host.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. How's it going?
Oh, it's good on my end. Rainy day here in New Jersey. Trying to get all my work in the beginning of the week so I can go look at the eclipse with Hallie and Cal. Go to an indoor water slide park.
Oh, that'd be sick.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be a good week.
Wish I could make it for the eclipse this year. I saw it partially in the 2017.
And yeah.
It was something else.
Yeah. Hallie's a real big environmentalist, and she's raising our son to be excited about natural things. So she's planned a whole trip.
Oh, that's freaking awesome.
We're driving to a part of the Eastern Seaboard where it's supposed to have a particularly good view. Let's see if it all works out.
Yeah. Well, that's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
I'm all things environmental and Earth.
Love it. Love it. How are you doing today?
I work as a geologist, so...
You work as a geologist?
Oh, I work as a geologist, yes. As far as how I'm doing today, I'm tired and exhausted. But, I work actually in a pretty niche part of geology. Work doing borehole geophysics.
Borehole geophysics.
Yeah. Sounds really fancy.
I love the way it feels coming out of my mouth. Borehole geophysics.
That's what I thought when I took this job.
What does borehole geophysics entail?
So essentially, we take a host of different tools. And after a company drills a hole, whether it be for an environmental investigation for a water well, or maybe it's exploration for mining, be a whole host of different reasons. But after they drill that hole, we send tools down to measure properties of the rock and give them basically a log of the hole with different data that they can use to interpret the subsurface strata. So, if you know, we could do anything from running a camera essentially down to running what's called an NMR, which is a nuclear magnetic resonance tool. It is basically a giant magnet that produces a spin in electrons and then measures the decay rate in hydrogen electrons. And from that, through some complicated mathematics, you are able to determine what's called a K value, which is hydraulic conductivity, which is basically just a measure of how well water moves through a certain unit of rock.
Now I'm going to tell you two things.
But it's basically.
Can I tell you two things in reaction to this?
Yeah.
One is that I am all about this. I'm already loving this call. I have so many questions. Two, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, dude. You get that a lot?
I get that a lot. I do. I mean, I even geologists that hire my company, a lot of them need a lot of hand-holding through processing data and through interpretation, which I'm not even the best at the interpretation of the data myself. I'm mainly a data collector, but I am starting to break into the more interpretation of it. And it is wild, the stuff that you can basically call it like a proxy measurement. You know, you're not directly measuring, you know, you're not counting pore space in a rock, but through different, you know, methods, proxy measurements, we're able to estimate them pretty accurately, what the pore space of a rock might be. So that's pretty cool. And that's important for water.
Again,
your dad works in water, right?
My dad's got a PhD in environmental science. You got a good memory, man. My dad, I'm very, very proud of my dad. My dad worked his whole life and he never stopped going to school. Meanwhile, I have actively encouraged people to avoid school in what must be his true horror. He got his PhD just a few years before he retired, but he worked in pharmaceuticals. But his real passion, was water and things that I think you'd probably agree are things that are coming more and more into focus now after his retirement, like desalination that's actually one of the unspoken huge things happening in science right now is studies on desalination, right?
Desalination is one of them. A big one that people don't that live on the seaboards that don't really talk about it is seawater encroachment into freshwater aquifers.
That's going to change everything.
One of the cool ways they're combating that is by drilling a bunch of deep holes on the coast and then injecting fresh water to kind of push back the salty groundwater.
So they're almost building like vertical walls of fresh water?
Basically, yeah.
Damn.
So as you're pumping on these city wells and stuff, and everyone that lives, you know, obviously the coast is a desired place to live. But the more people live there, the more water they consume. A lot of places will drill a water well, you know. But as you pump on that water well, you're drawing down, you know, that immediate spot where the water level is. You're drawing that down. And that creates what's called a cone of depression, which is a really great band name.
I've had days like that. I mean, listen, if there's anybody who you don't need to explain the cone of depression to, it's me and most of the fan base of this particular podcast. We all say no more.
Yeah, no, I am.
We get the
that.
Analogy. The cone of depression, been there. Cone Can't get depression. Out of bed some but, mornings. Water pressure.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
These things tie in.
So, anywho, they end up, in, you know, to combat that, they end up pumping fresh water near or in between these water wells to try and push back you know, raise the head pressure and kind of keep that salt water from intruding into the aquifer that's being used for our human purposes.
I have not heard of that, but that's terrifying. That because aquifers are basically giant underground reservoirs that are used all over the world to supply humanity with fresh water, and people tap into them. But hearing you say so, I would imagine some combination of climate change, global warming, unpredictable weather patterns, seawater's coming up further than we are used to, and that water goes places and it travels both naturally as water, and then I have to also imagine through root systems and stream systems. And if you get salt water in your aquifer, now you don't have water for humans to drink, and that's already at a premium.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, pretty much that. I mean, you pretty much nailed it. I mean, think of most water kind of moves through, like, think if you put water through a sponge, you know, and we've got, you know, I mean, it's not typically not free water, as we would call it. It's not like the same as you'd see on running through a lake, but it is kind of almost like working its way through a wet sponge, you know. That's how I best describe groundwater reservoirs.
Let me ask you this. So when I was a child, inappropriate, my dad is the best. He's a great guy. If he hears this, he knows I think he's a great guy. But he did used to tell me very casually, because he's got scientist brain, and I think you know what I mean, where sometimes you will have conversations about science and not realize that to people who are not schooled in science, it sounds like you're describing a horror movie that's real. And he, when I was a child, started to explain to me, you know, he was like, we're just multiplying as a species at a rate that's untenable, and we aren't going to have enough water to support humanity after a certain point, and nations will eventually go to war over water. There will be wars to secure water supplies, which to my knowledge hasn't happened yet. Do you agree with my father, both the facts of that, and also how do you feel about him telling me that at the age of 7, 8?
All right, I agree with your dad on that.
War. We're going to go to war over water.
There has not been a war fought over water yet. There's been some heated debates, especially in the Middle East and, you know, Africa, about water and access to water. And so that is a up and coming conflict sticking point between peoples, especially when we've got a lot of water that's no longer, you know, it's either tainted or polluted, you know, take your pick. Clean fresh water is becoming
plastics, scarce. Microfibers, carbons, all these things that are infecting our water.
There's a lot. And I'm kind of with your dad on the telling you young, maybe not in such a dooms like way, but
he was very matter of fact. He wasn't trying to scare me. He just had no emotional awareness that he was in fact scaring me. This is a thing for many of us who were raised by men of his generation. Of like, Dad, you're scaring the shit out of me, and you're not noticing it. Wait, please. Oh, no, more facts. Okay, now I can't sleep. Now I can't sleep at night because I'm terrified because you've explained water availability to me. But he actually has a patent. He has a patent on a salt, on like a desalination filter that he helped develop. But I was like, I've read about this desalination thing. It comes up from time to time. And I always get excited, and I send him the articles. I'm like, Dad, people are talking about it. But the ways he's explained it to me is he's like, there's actually many ways to desalinate water. There's a lot of people trying to figure out how to do it effectively and cost efficiently. But the other big problem is, sure, we have an overabundance of salt water, and if we can remove the salt, we can use that water for humanity's needs and purposes. But then what do you do with the salt? Because wherever you put salt, whether it's back in the ocean or on land, it's going to kill everything around it. So how do you just keep – do we have to start launching giant amounts of salt into space as we desalinate water? Like what – And he would say things like this to me, and I would go, so is there any way out? Is there any reason to get out of bed in the morning? You want to talk about the cone of depression? Think about the way that we treat the earth.
Yeah. It sounds hopeless when you don't have the science mind, because the science mind is always trying to solve problems.
Yeah.
I'd say that it's seeing like, oh yeah, we don't know yet, but we're persistent little bastards is what I would say. And you know, when we can't solve something, it bugs us to our core, and we keep trying at it. So I would say there's hope in that. And then, eventually somebody's going to come along, and there's going to be and sometimes it'll seem like that solution was hiding in plain sight all along. Sometimes it takes a real big shift in technology and in theoretics and stuff like that to make that next jump. But I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to like Northern Nevada or, you know, Nevada in general outside of Vegas. There's a lot of open, empty. There's a lot of lake beds out here that are, you know, very salty. You know, there's a lot of, take the salt flats in Utah, for instance. You've got, miles upon miles of just open, flat, salty desert, which, you know, anytime you're transferring one thing to another place, you're going to affect the local ecosystems, and something's going to pay for it. Doesn't matter where you put it, how you do it, something's going to pay the price for it. You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the other thing you got to balance in that equation, is what is deemed acceptable, you know?
Yeah.
To disrupt for our gain.
Do you have hope fundamentally as a scientist who can think like this? Like the way you just broke that down to me was so factual. Here's how we have to think of it. Do you have hope? What a revealing sigh.
The reason I sigh, I'll just tell you this, is that, you know, politically right now, with everything back and forth, choosing between a douche and a turd sandwich, in my mind, you know, is, as, you know, South Park so eloquently put it, is the whole emotional aspect and reading people, I mean, I deal with rocks, and there's a reason I deal with rocks. I don't understand people that well.
Yeah.
And I think if we were to just stick to facts, we could get a lot of shit done. But you have to convince the money holders and the power players to give up their immediate best interest as far as monetary-wise and power gain-wise to achieve a longer-term goal. And the way that our society has operated, especially the last 20 years, is quarter to quarter, you know? So at least in the United States, there are some companies and some people that are trying to do this long-term shit, but it's not at the rate that we need.
I think
to get a lot of this stuff done.
It's so simply and well stated. I do want to ask, I don't know if you mentioned it. Do you have a master's degree in geology, doctorate? Where are we at?
No, I have a bachelor's.
Bachelor's.
I'm
not judging.
Yeah. I'm highly considering going back and getting a master's because shit recently at work has hit the fan. And, I mean, we've been understaffed where I'm at for 6 months. Just give you a little some background. Like, I work primarily in the mining industry. You know, I do projects on a whole host of things, but primarily in mining. And I work 10 days on, 4 days off, or at least I'm supposed to. And when I'm on 24 hours a day. So I can get a call at any time and, hey, we need you out here at, you know, 1 a.m. I could have worked a full day that day in the office and then still have to try and get a small nap in, drive out to a site, be on, you know, be on site for 14 hours and then drive back. And nothing out here is really close together, so it might be 2 hours, 3 hours of driving on either end of that. So, and we've been understaffed for like 6 months. Because the guy that my manager had hired went and got himself arrested. And that's something that a lot of us saw coming. A few of us that worked there saw coming that he refused to see. And but because of that, we've been understaffed 6 months and then and miserable for like 6 months.
We think, based on what you're saying, I'm thinking maybe like a drug problem or something amongst with this person.
Yeah. So we've got several. So the way that, you know, we do our work is we've got a wire line on a winch that has a connection on the end that we connect the tool to. And inside of this, you know, braided steel wire line is, you know, a few copper conducting wires that, you know, send data up to surface from the tool. So we've got several trucks, and we have to kind of share the trucks, and some trucks are best suited for different holes based on different, you know, how deep it is or, you know, the rock characteristics or whatever the case may be. But this guy, so I helped train him, and I was trying to tell management, I'm like, yo, like, this dude is a liability. He had, you know, claimed a bunch of stuff when he was hired, and then when he actually got here, none of that was true. And I was like, all right, we're just, you know, we're having a hard time hiring people as it is, so let's just roll with the punches on this. But then when I was training him, there he was ignoring some safety rules, which in mining is like cardinal sin. Like you need to maintain safety at all times. And after that, you know, I kept trying to tell management like his liability. And he's like, "You're so mean." I'm like, "I'm not mean. I'm just like he's a nice guy, but like he's a liability." Anywho, fast forward a few months later, you know, I had found like rolled up dollar bills in the truck, so I'm like, I don't know what he's snorting, but he's snorting something while on site. And that's also just a huge no-no, as far as any sort of...
You don't need to know too much about mining to know that people, every few years, people get trapped and die. Like, we can't have people snorting drugs as they're helping to lay out the infrastructure of the actual physical mind experience. Like, exactly. You don't have to justify this too hard to me, my friend. Well, your bosses may have wanted to defend their hire. I'm like, you don't need to jump through any hoops to convince me you weren't being mean when you're like, I think this guy might be snorting meth on the job. And like, meth might be one of the preferable ones because at least it keeps him awake and focused. Like, that's best case scenario, is this person snorting uppers as they help bore holes that will determine. I would have to imagine part of what you're determining is what kind of materials are down there to be mined, but then also, hey, the way water's moving, it's not safe. People are going to get killed if we dig a mine here. Or there's pockets of gases that might explode. Or there's
fractures analysis is one of the things we do.
Yeah, this is prone to a collapse if we drill here. Like, I have to imagine these are all things that you are partially responsible for flagging. So if it's like best case scenario, this guy is snorting amphetamines that up the focus, best case.
That's best case. It was not best case. But
you're not being mean in flagging that to your bosses. Let's pause it right there. I think all of us would say that if you work at a job where you could die every day, and your coworkers are actively on drugs, you're not being mean by giving a little heads up about that to the bosses. think you're doing the right thing. That doesn't make you a rat. That makes you someone who wants to not perish in a mine. Anyway, we'll be right back, everybody. We've got a few ads. Use the promo codes. It helps the show when you do. See you in a minute. Hi, everybody. Specifically, grown-ups. I wanted to tell you about the Cat in the Hat cast, which is a new podcast from our friends at Wondery. Wondery has been very supportive of Beautiful Anonymous, and I love that we get to tell you about so many of their shows. This show, by the way, is perfect for the whole family, and I know there's a lot of parents who listen. You're going to want to join the Cat in the Hat and your favorite Dr. Seuss characters as they get whisked away on a new adventure every week. Fish dreams of creating his very own polite and quiet podcast. That is until he gets a surprise visit to his Fishbowl podcast studio from the Cat in the Hat himself, and it becomes quite clear that the cat has other plans for the podcast. Those plans are not quiet. The cat may be disruptive, but it turns out he's also a great help. He gets Fish out of all kinds of predicaments. This podcast bursts with music, silliness, rhymes, things that are going to entertain you while also entertaining the kids. The Cat in the Hat cast encourages us all to find fun that is funny in every single episode. You can sing along to songs, try your luck at Titanic tongue twisters, have some fun with wondrous wordplay, and most importantly, bring your family along for all of the adventures in the Cat in the Hat cast. Follow the Cat in the Hat cast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Cat in the Hat cast ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Thanks to all our advertisers. Now let's get back to the phone call. Best case scenario, this guy is snorting amphetamines that up the focus. Best case.
That's best case. It was not best case.
You're not being mean in flagging that to your bosses. Yeah. Yeah, I have to imagine this was not a best case thing.
Yeah. So, anywho, we'd known about a couple DUIs that he'd had in the past that he said were cleared up. Anyhow, one weekend he just doesn't, you know, he's supposed to be back on a Tuesday, and we get a call on a Monday from the county jail in Denver,
which is
a few hundred miles away, not more than a few hundred miles away from where we are. And he made up a story, said, oh, this is some old stuff from back in the day. And then when they wouldn't give him bail, we got the full story. And it kind of trickled in over a month or two. But he'd gone on a bender and tried to break into his old place.
Yeah, can't have this. Can't have this.
Can't have it. So, yeah. Hey, that's why we've been understaffed. This guy's been, you know, this guy went and did what he did. And we had been begging upper management, not just my direct manager, who's in charge of my office, but, you know, owners of the company and all that. Had been begging him, like, hey, we need somebody out here. Like, we are working insane hours. You know, I didn't get a day off for like 2 months. You know, going out every day or every other day. You know, anywhere from 14 to over 20-hour shifts daily for a few months. It really wears you down. And we've been begging not only our direct manager, but, you know, them to, like, the upper management to hire somebody. And nothing was really moving forward. And then last week, and we'd had some, you know, run-ins with our own manager, just him doing some shitty things as far as, you know, cherry picking the easiest jobs or telling us that he's too busy to go out on jobs, and, you know, just kind of not being the team player that the rest of us were, I guess. And anyway, he puts in his 2 weeks out of the blue. And because of that, like, we're taking already short staffed office, you know, throw it into complete chaos. The last week or two has been just running around chicken with our head cut off, trying to figure out how to do a lot of the stuff that, as far as paperwork side, that he never showed us how to do because we didn't need to know.
Well, look,
shit show, dude.
It's not like mining is known historically to be the most labor friendly industry.
No.
In America, no, if anything, I mean, we're talking about an industry that well into the 20th century, I mean, there's documentaries about, you know, people having actual guns shot at them for trying to strike for more rights. There's, you know, the company store is a very real thing that the mining industry was famous for. Of like, hey, we will give you a house and we will pay you in literal monopoly money that you then have to, you can only spend at our store, so that you are effectively held as a borderline slave. You're held captive. You cannot, the currency we pay you in, you cannot go anywhere else and spend it. It can only be spent at our stores. And also, P.S., we own your house. So while it's not, well,
kick you out at any time.
It is economic slavery in a certain sense. Like, we're talking about an industry where pretty much the only times that things have ever affected change are two things, right? Which is mass labor movements that they historically will hire strike breakers to fight back against, or horrific tragedies that become worldwide news. Those are generally two things that make the needle move in mining. And look, I'm sure I'm painting it with a wide brush, because I'm sure there have been people trying to do good and whatnot. But historically, if I've heard enough about it, then historically there's truth to it. So to hear that you're working, you know, all day and then being called to a 1 a.m. shift, to hear that there's managers taking the easy shifts and sticking people with the hard shifts, you sit here and go, well, what's that going to lead to? You know, best, again, thinking best case scenario, before we were joking about the best case scenario is that someone's snorting meth. You go, well, best case scenario is that if mining companies are running that way, best case scenario is that it's just an economic loss when these mines collapse because the research wasn't done properly, the data wasn't gathered properly, and there's not, God forbid, people actually down in those mines at the time. Best case scenario. But it's an industry that historically is one that only changes when it becomes absolutely necessary, and that only has happened in a mass movement way via labor movements and tragedies. So yeah, I hope you don't have to participate in either of those, because I've been a part of labor movements and they're not easy. And I'm in a cushy industry. I'm not in mining. I'm not in a hard industry like you are, let alone, I have to imagine it's got to be tough for you, because outside of the fact that you're overworked and outside of the fact that you're working these hours where you're 10 days on and 1 a.m. calls and people taking the easy jobs and not sharing those, which you would like to think those get rotated for everybody's comfort, I have to imagine that with what you're doing, you sit here and go, is this going to put me in a position where, God forbid, I might be the exhausted one that writes something down wrong, and then the data that I misreport leads to a catastrophic event of some sort? That's very real for you.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, it absolutely is. It's not only that, but I mean, even driving back after the job, you know, I that's one of the things that I try to tell my manager, like, hey, like, can't be pulling these double jobs, you know, I'm being up for 36 hours and this, that, and the other. And, you know, and the mines have rules against how long you're supposed to be on site, that I was, you know, basically told, like, oh, well, it doesn't really count and it's not really dangerous. And that's, I think that was the tipping point for me. I don't want to be a statistic, you know, or at least on that side of the statistic.
No,
and I definitely don't want to be part to something that hurts somebody else, you know?
And when you think about, I have to imagine, and I don't want to get too dark because you and I are also guys who are laughing a lot, but just to spend a few minutes on it, I sit here and I go, it's got to be very sobering for you when you see like a freight train disaster or as information's coming out more about the bridge collapse after the shipping accident in Baltimore, and you sit here and you go, these are, at the end of the day, other jobs where things have been deregulated and the money people are allowed to allocate less personnel. All right, we can maximize profits, and one of the things that we can minimize is we take more chances for safety, and that puts more money in shareholders' pockets. And God, it must be scary for you to see those things happen and go, when they work me all day in the office and then I got to be out of bed so I can be on the site at 1 a.m., I'm one of those goddamn people being put in that exact position. It must be terrifying for you to see these other things that are infrastructure failures. And then when it comes out, you realize that John Oliver did a great piece on freight shipping in America and freight trains in particular, where you realize, oh, those massive trains you see when you're out traveling in the middle of America, and you see there's two workers on those trains. Mm-hmm. There's someone up front, there's someone in the back on that entire train. You sit there and you go, no wonder these things are meeting with disasters, because they're whittling down the safety till non-existent.
Yeah.
And then you're up at 3 in the goddamn morning trying to stuff a wire down a hole going, what the fuck am I doing? This is nuts.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, it's not only even seeing these. I mean, it hits even closer. I mean, there's a guy that I was, knew and had worked with a couple times that, died in an accident out here.
Yeah, it's horrible, man.
Back in September.
Somebody who worked in a related field to yours, or who did the same thing as you?
Yeah. So in my field, we generally work with the drillers themselves, right? And a couple of driller helpers weren't trained on a truck that they were supposed to be trained on. And they were, rushed into finding someplace in the dark up a hillside that, they were given vague information about on a truck they weren't trained on. And the truck ended up rolling down the hill, killed the driver and I had worked with a couple times, and the other helper that was with him put him in critical condition. And we hear about stuff like that, and it happens. That's the thing, is there's all mining's under MSHA, the Mine Safety and Health Administration. And they do reports on every death that happens in a mine. They don't necessarily report the what we classify as a near miss, or something almost happened. But when there's a death in mining, anyone that works in mining, or anybody that has, wants to look it up, they issue a report on what happened, what was the best practice that was ignored, and a lot of the time it's people, pressure from upper management, trying to, maximize profits. And who knows how far removed, the pressure is coming down from, where it's very top, or just some guy that's trying to make himself look good. You never know, but people eventually pay the price for that. And like you said, I'm like, I don't want to be the one that's paying that price.
Right. Right. Yeah, before I phrased it of like, you don't want to be the one who makes a mistake that puts someone in danger. It's like, yeah, of course not. Also, I could fucking die.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of terrifying. I mean, like, the other day I was working in an underground mine, where you have to hop into this hoist basket and they lower you, a couple thousand feet underground. And the only way out is that hoist back up.
You've done that. You've been 1,000 feet underground.
I've been a couple thousand feet underground, yeah.
Whew.
And it's not a fun environment down there, I'll tell you that. It's hot, and you got to be wearing, a lot of times you've got to be wearing a respirator, because there could be a whole host of environmental things that are out to kill you, whether it's, because anytime you're dealing with minerals, you know, precious minerals, for instance, there's always nasty shit that is deposited along with it, whether it be lead, mercury, arsenic, you know, basically take your pick and nasty shit that can kill you. And you've got to protect yourself against that. You that, you know, you wear a respirator that's designed for that specific threat. But I mean, you're down there in these, you know, a couple thousand feet underground, and you know, on the surface temperature might be like 30 degrees, but down there it's 100 and something. So there's a lot of extra stresses that also, it's not just, you know, being up and tired. It's you're down in a small shaft that, you know, you're constantly looking around at the roof of the mine and the walls of the mine to make sure that there's not loose rock that's going to fall on you. There's giant haul trucks that are moving ore back and forth. A lot to give you motivation to keep your head on a swivel. And when you're doing it tired, it's even more terrifying to think about after you're even out of the situation.
Yeah. The more I hear about it, the more I'm going, there's, it's not a joke. Like, the working people, the real working people in America are getting squeezed in a way that's not okay. That's not okay. To hear that you're working the hours you're working and being put in some positions you're putting in, and then the jobs are literally that deadly at times, you sit here, you go, something's got to change. And legislators either need to start being honest and changing it now, or the only other way it's going to change is when people are fed up. And you don't want to get to that point. It's never pleasant. It's never
right
for anybody on any side. So change it now, because you can't have exhausted people doing jobs where simple mistakes get you killed. You can't do it. You can't have companies of such importance as far as the infrastructure they provide to the whole country hiring people who are snorting drugs in the middle of the night, and then you're in the passenger seat going, I think this person's high, and I work a job where if one mistake gets made, I might die in a mine. I can't have you hire her.
Right.
We can't be so desperate for people that we ignore the very obvious problems with this person. And if I flag concerns. Them, you tell me, yeah. You're telling me I'm mean. No.
Not what's happening, but I don't know. I'm kind of, with this manager leaving, like I was planning on, I kind of had a foot out the door here. And when I heard he was leaving, I'm like, I didn't think I'd ever see the day. So it kind of changed my perspective a little bit. But yeah, I don't even know if I'm going to continue in this line of work right now, as far as, you know, continuing necessarily in mining.
How'd you get into it?
Everything. You know, in college, I went in with the idea that I wanted to work in, you know, water and contaminants and tracking, you know, contamination plumes and more environmental side. But as my student loans piled up, as I was in college and then also taking different classes, I kind of discovered a love for mineral exploration, mineralogy in general. And that's kind of how I initially got into geology, why I took a geology class in the first place, was I kind of had, you know, had some friends that had gotten into like gold prospecting just as like a hobby. And like gold panning and stuff. And I wanted to know more, you know, I wanted to know where do I look for gold in the first place, you know? And I kind of rediscovered that as I was taking a few of these courses. And then when I got out, the best paying jobs were in mining. So I, you know, I went from, when I started, you know, kind of community college level of like, okay, I want to do environmental, I want to work with water, to, you know, I met a couple of great professors and stuff that kind of took me under their wing and, you know, helped me with a few research projects that I was working on. And I was like, this is pretty cool. Maybe I want to do this. And then I got into, you know, out of school, I got a job at a large silver mine. It was called core logging. And I worked there for a few months, and then I hurt my back. And that was one another thing where I was understaffed. And my one coworker that was with me had a medical thing that came up, and so they had to be taken off site, which left me doing all the work for a weekend. Ended up hurting my back. They told me, oh, take all the time you need. Your job's safe. Took about 3 months to rehab my back to where I could was cleared for full work. And then I emailed them, like, hey, they say I'm all better. I'm going to be on the next flight up there. And then they said, don't come back. You've been replaced. So that's when I started, you know, I don't know. It's all student loans. It comes down to it. Just, I don't like having debt. So I went for the highest paying position that I could with my level of education.
Now, the first time that you go 2,000 feet down into a 100-plus degree mine with a respirator on, there's a first time that happens. And I have to imagine you don't know how you're going to react psychologically to that until you go and do it the first time. Because there might be some people who come up and their personality is just not the same as when they went down there.
Oh, well, I've got a coworker that refuses to go underground. Just says, I'm not doing it, you know. And there's a couple different ways you can mine underground. One of them, you have a portal, which is you basically can drive in and out of the mine. So that's how I was kind of introduced to underground mining. That first mine that I worked at, we had a portal that we drove in. And then, you know, you're driving underground, obviously. Not obviously, but with those ones, you know, you've got haul trucks, you've got are called muckers, which are basically squat little front end loaders that are used to kind of scoop up the rocks. And then there's, you know, full size pickup trucks and all that operating underground. But then there's also hoist mines, which maybe the rock's unstable, maybe it was just more economical, whatever it was, but they basically just drive a vertical shaft down and go from there. And that's the one I was in the other day. I'd say if your first time is via a hoist mine, it's a trip because you walk onto this cage, right, and they shut the door. You start going down, and it's just pitch black immediately. And it's not like it's a smooth, you know, hotel elevator that just kind of whoop. I'm this thing clanking and banging around as you're going down. Then you finally like get to whatever station you're supposed to be off at. You know, it's a trip. It's definitely a trip. So I think my first time down there, it wasn't too bad for me. I thought it was pretty freaking cool. But you know, like I said, I've got several coworkers that just refuse to go underground. They're like, I'm that's too much. Be too claustrophobic. There's no way I can walk out of here. There's a, you know,
yeah,
say 1,100 feet of rock above me.
Oh, good God.
And there is no ladder, you know. So you got to kind of, at least for me, I got to kind of like put that out of my mind, you know, because I am a very anxious person in general. But yeah, I think a lot of my anxiety more revolves around interactions with people. So
right.
I'm like, I can deal with the, like, I can kind of compartmentalize this part of it. You know,
tuck that away. Takes a certain type, and then you have it in you, it turns out.
I mean, yeah, I guess.
Now, you started studying this in school. You had aspirations towards some environmental stuff. Student loans pile up. You figure out money's in mining. You wind up in here. You're now in a place where you're going, I don't know about these hours. I don't know about the safety. I don't know about some of the practices. You're doing some soul searching. this is real life, obviously. Are you still able on a basic level to see a thing about a rock or learn a thing about strata, whatever it may be, and just get kind of nerdy and excited like you were when you first discovered your love of silence? Yeah. Tell me what still gets you excited in that like nerdy little kid way.
So one of the biggest things that I'm kind of obsessed with is like fluorescent minerals.
So yes. There's a mine in New Jersey that's famous for them.
Yep. Franklin, I think.
The Franklin mine. You know about the Franklin mine? Boom. Everybody, we got to pause. Look up the Franklin mine. Very popular place for North Jersey kids to go on field trips. You kind of go, you wander around, and then they show you all the glow-in-the-dark gems, and you can even buy a little bag of gems on your way out. Everybody in North Jersey's out here talking about the Franklin mine, and I cannot believe that this caller knows it. Blew my mind. Duh, with a D on the end that time. I've said the word mine many times in recent memory. Anyway, we've got a few ads. Everybody check them out. Use the promo codes. Helps the show. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Chris here, and I'm so happy to tell you once again about a sponsor who has stood by us for many years, been one of the great champions of this show, and a company I'm so happy to remind you about. It is, of course, our friends at Talkspace. Now, if you've listened to this show for any length of time, you've heard over the years, you've heard me speak to my past, which has had many ups and downs as far as my own emotions, my own mental stability. You've heard different stretches where I've been stressed out. I'm so lucky. We've had listeners who have followed us for years who say, I can hear in your voice, there's some tension, there's some stress right now. Or other people who go, hey man, you seem really laid back and relaxed. Well, guess what? It's because I do get down sometimes. Things affect my life. I'm not good at hiding it. And I learned many years ago that therapy was something that was so stigmatized when I grew up, but that is so much more accessible now and healthy and helpful in my experience in a way that I find hard to even put into words. And when I think about my experience first seeking out therapy, it was hard. It felt like it was a behind closed doors thing. It felt like a thing that you couldn't even totally ask for help with amongst loved ones because they didn't know and they didn't feel comfortable talking about it, and the stigmas felt so real. Well, guess what? Talkspace is one of the companies kicking down all of those stigmas and making it easy to find a therapist you like. It's convenient. You can meet online. You can do it from your own home. You can do it where you are most comfortable, and it'll make a huge difference in your life. I know that feeling of needing to set aside time for this and feeling like that's both impossible logistically with a busy schedule and daunting with taking it on. Try Talkspace. They are making it simple. They're making it easy. They're making it accessible, and they are making it affordable. And one of the main things I need to encourage, I'll never, ever forget a friend of mine years ago coming to me and saying, you know, you've talked a lot about your therapy, and I'm going to see a therapist soon, and you're one of the reasons I feel comfortable doing so. And I was very flattered by that. And I said, oh, well, when are you starting? And they said, oh, I'm not going to start now. I'm not totally at rock bottom yet. But when I get there, I know now I'm feeling okay about therapy as an option. I go, don't wait for rock bottom. It's the mistake we all make. If you see rock bottom is on its way, I promise you, rock bottom is a horrible place to get to. Why not start the process today so you don't have to get to that rock bottom? Why not reach out to Talkspace right now? Getting started is the hardest part. It's the most important part. It's also the part that Talkspace makes easier than you would imagine. You can sign up online. You get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you. That typically happens within 48 hours. You can send messages to your therapist so that you don't even have to wait for your next session. And you don't have to have that anxiety of, oh, what if I forget one of the things I wanted to talk to them about, or I've been writing them down, but I can't find my notepad before my session. Just message it to them then. They keep the running conversation going. It's also secure and private, by the way. They use bank-grade encryption technology. Client information is stored in ways that comply with the latest HIPAA regulations. It's also in network with most major insurers. And as a listener of Beautiful Anonymous, you'll get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com/beautiful. Enter the promo code SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/beautiful. Enter promo code SPACE80. Get $80 off of your first month and show your support for our show. That's Talkspace.com/beautiful. The promo code is SPACE80. Thanks again to all of our sponsors. Now we're going to finish off the phone call.
So one of the biggest things that I'm kind of obsessed with is like fluorescent minerals.
So, yes, there's a mine in New Jersey that's famous for them.
Yep. Franklin, I think.
The Franklin mine? You know about the Franklin mine?
I know, well, because that's like the any mineral or gem museum you go to, it says like Franklin, New Jersey, and that's the one that really lights up that bright orange. And that's how I know about it, you know? Like I said, I still nerd out about some shit, and I've got like a couple little pocket LED lights, or you know, UV lights that anytime I go out to site, you know, you never know really where you're going to find them. But I mean, I've got some downtime as I'm working, so I just will look around the ground and I'm spotting for shiny shit. Really, I love
so you
the shiny.
Still just. On a basic level, I'm sitting here and it's like my academic life, I was pointing it towards one way. My work went another way. I'm now up front looking at the profit-driven grimness of American industry. I've had people, acquaintances die on site. That being said, if I see a shiny rock, I still geek out.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I think, you know, that it's not only that, but then just the, you know, natural desire for me to be outside and work outside that keeps me where I am. Just because I get a lot of, you know, anytime I'm going out of job, it's just me. You know, I don't have like coworkers or a manager directly looking over me while I'm out there. I may be interacting with, you know, drillers or something like that, but I got a lot of time to drive by myself. But then I go out and as I'm there, the other cool thing that you talk to any geologist and they kind of nerd out is like road cuts or cross cuts is what we call them, you know, is, you know, a good way for the strata to be exposed. You know, when you kind of carve out the side of a hill, you can kind of see layers and fractures and faults and banding and whatever else. And there's no better place than in a mine to see that, because it's just basically a giant pit that, you know, is just, you know, all exposed strata. So as I've got time, you know, say I'm like on standby at a site because they haven't quite finished drilling the hole or something, I just sit there and I just kind of nerd out and I look around and I'm looking at different faults and folds and, you know, suspecting what areas are mineralized and what aren't. Because I mean, that's the interesting about where I worked on what's called a Carlin type deposit, which is, I mean, I could go for hours on this, but you know, normally you'd think like, oh, somebody goes out, they see gold somewhere and they start mining there, right? They physically see the gold. All the gold where I'm at is invisible to the naked eye. It's called micron scale gold, but it's one of the richest deposits in the world. And it's all, you've heard of fool's gold, right?
I have heard of fool's gold, yeah.
Right? So all the actual gold is actually entrained around a small rim of pyrite. So it's called arsenopyrite, which is like, you get a lot of arsenic. You know, but there's micron gold entrained in that arsenopyrite rim. And the way they extract it is a whole nother kit and caboodle that I won't get into, but they It's a lot of gold you can't see with the naked eye, but is one of the richest deposits in the world. There's just a whole lot of micron scale gold out here.
So a lot of the stuff that still excites you is stuff that, and I say this with joy, because I think it speaks well to your, where your heart is at. A lot of the stuff that excites you is the stuff that excites a little kid about the idea of geology.
Oh yeah.
Like straight up fluorescent rocks. Very much my UV so. Light. Looking at the cut and being like, oh, there's where the different, you can see where the water ran through and created the levels of strata. Oh, we might be around straight up gold. Like that's the same reason that like that's the reason that like a touristy campsite sets up the like mining for gold panning thing that little kids go into, where you buy the bag of rocks and put it in the water and shake it out in the pan. It's the same excitement, but you do it for real. 2,000 feet underground with a meth head.
Yeah.
Not even a meth head. He's not even meeting that bar with with someone who's on an unidentified drug that is less productive than methamphetamine. That's an accurate description of your life.
It's 100% accurate. And to take it, you know, I think it's hilarious that you say, like, you go to a tourist thing and pan out for, like, I bought shit like that on eBay just to do it myself. Like I bought what is called Pater on eBay that you can just buy it. They guarantee it's got, you know, like a gram of gold in it or something like that. And you just get a couple pounds of dirt in the mail.
And then you pan go it through and you're like, hell yeah, dog, let's do it.
And I am stoked when I'm doing it.
Now I haven't even asked.
A lot of people are like, "That sounds boring," and I'm like, "This sounds like the coolest shit in the world to me."
Now you've mentioned that you're an introvert. You've mentioned that there's a part of you that can go 2,000 feet underground because that's more comfortable. You haven't said this word, but I'm like, it sounds like you're the type of person that's like, no, I'd prefer that than having to go to a party and make small talk with 40 strangers. Like you've kind of indicated that.
Oh yeah.
I haven't asked a thing about your personal life this entire time. I don't know if you're married. I don't know if you got roommates, if you live alone. I don't know any of it.
No, I'm single. I live alone. You know, the closest thing that I have to a roommate is there's a coworker that lives in my same little apartment complex, little quadplex thing. That's basically it. I work, I come home, I play video games, you know, and I nerd out on, like, if I'm not, you know, and I've made a few friends on, like, you know, like on Xbox Live and stuff like that are, you know, become fairly good friends, but have never met them in person, sort of a thing. And that's easier to me. But yeah, no, I'm pretty much a loner. Yeah.
And when you say you have like a few friends on Xbox Live, that leaves me to connect the dots and say, you don't have like buddies you go and grab a drink with? Like it's the Xbox Live crew that are the people you meet up with
in the gaming world. The nightly hangout for sure. And you know, there's a few friends I hang out, you know, almost nightly, you know, on there. So, and we'll sit there and talk about whatever for hours. And I've got some friends where I grew up, you know, my best friend still lives in the same area where I grew up. And, you know, I try to get out there cause I'm only a few hours away from him. So, and my mom still lives out that way. So every once in a while I try to get out there. I'm actually going to be heading there later today, but yeah, no, as far as in general, pretty much just keep to myself. Like I like going out to the bars every once in a while, but like, you know, I'm 34. I don't need to be, I'm kind of past that age of spending all my time and energy and money out at a bar getting stupid or whatever.
It's wild to think of though, that you think of the old time cliche of a miner and you think of like solitary men going off into the hills and this isolated life. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have the old time image in your head of like somebody with the big beard and
Yeah.
You know, whatnot. But then you realize some of that industry's cliche of like people wandering off who prefer some isolation, some of that is culturally part of that lifestyle and still true, it sounds like, at least in your case.
Oh, yeah. Well, for me, at least, yeah, I tend to stick to myself. And like, and historically, you're 100% correct. Like, I just finished this book called The Bonanza King that, you know, really, like, as I read it, I kind of realized it should really be split up into, like, three different books. But it's the story of John Mackey, who actually the University of Nevada, Reno, has a school of mines called the Mackey School of Mines. And tells the story of this guy that, you know, is an Irish immigrant born on a, you know, on a dirt floor that became one of the most powerful, you know, one of the richest people in the world, you know, on the same level of the Vanderbilts and the, what's the other name I'm thinking of, you know, that New York area.
The Carnegies.
Even more like, he was incredibly successful from mining out here in Nevada, actually. It was called the Comstock Lode. And you don't really hear about him too much because he wasn't this bad guy. You know, he is a guy that treated people fairly and was pretty fair in his business dealings. And he didn't have a PR problem towards the end of his life. And so a lot of these, you know, big family names that, you know, had, you know, were pretty pro union busting, you know, type of people and exploiting labor. He really wasn't that. And so his name is kind of, at least in the, for the most part in the general populace, kind of lost to history. But was a dude that was just as rich and did so without the underhandedness and the exploitive way that these other people came into power and wealth. And I don't know, I kind of like, he's like, and a little bit of an unsung hero in my eyes, as far as, you know, somebody that was just a genuine dude, kind of rags to riches, but didn't do so in a manipulative and, you know, underhanded way. And I, you know, that's one thing that I admire for sure.
Remind me of that guy's name?
You know, it was John Mackey.
John Mackey. Sounds like one of the good ones. I do have to point out, I did ask you effectively, like, hey, you got any buddies you go out drinking with? And it did spiral into you saying, well, I did recently read a book about the history of mining, and I'd like to shout out John Mackey.
I'm very ADHD.
One of the good ones. I love it.
I'm very
ADHD. Do you have a big beard?
Out.
The world needs to know, do you have a big beard?
I had a beard. I had to shave it recently because I went underground and you can't have a beard, and a respirator doesn't work super well with a beard.
Yeah.
So I've got a small goatee now, but no, I did have a decent beard going.
This has been an eye-opening look. So you say you're thinking of getting out and going back to school. How long have you been at your job? And is going back to school going to almost be culture shock for you at this point? Just being around that many people and that much movement and so many people on a day-to-day basis?
It will be, just because I've been out. I mean, even when I travel outside of my little town, I went to LA recently because my brother lives there and spent some time. And every time I go to like a more populated place, I'm just like, there's a reason I don't come here. But no, I've only been in this role for like a couple years. I've only been out of school for three, you know. I was kind of a non-traditional student. And so now I'm kind of like, most people that I know of that I've worked with at this company that have left, and in fact, all but one have left to go get their masters because they realize the, you know, they're like, I don't want to be doing this.
This it's hard. Sounds like a hard thing. Life, man.
So, it is for sure. So, I don't know. It would be a culture shock a little bit just because, I mean, it was a culture shock coming here from school, you know, because, you know, school in the Northwest, you know, very equity minded out there. And then you come out to a small mining town and it is the complete opposite, you know. So it's always an adjustment for sure. And you got it, at least for me, I kind of have to, I never know exactly how to behave, I guess, or like, you know, to not like, I don't know, everything's become so polarized the last few years that it seems like you say one wrong thing and then people are looking at you with a side eye, you know? That's why, you know, for me at least, I just kind of keep my mouth shut. It's just like, yep, okay. I don't really hold, you know, or at least vocalize any of my opinions just so I'm not, you know, I'm a people pleaser, let's be honest. That's why I do it. But I just, you know, I prefer to like not ruffle feathers.
Our time is up for the free feed. I got to tell you, I've often said one of my favorite types of calls we get on the show is people with unique jobs. And this is up at the very top of that heap. To hear that you are a borehole geophysicist at the top, and then to find out what that means is that sometimes you go into mines full of invisible gold where you go 2,000 feet down underground. I sit there, I go, this is one of the most unique things I've ever heard. Yeah. I want to thank you for opening up and sharing about it. And if you have a few extra minutes, I'm going to go behind the paywall. I'm going to ask you 5 random questions about your life, which should be really fascinating in your case because we've focused so heavily on one thing, but it also sounds like that is the dominant thing. But I love the idea that we get to crack things open and get some very random, unpredictable aspects of life thrown into the mix as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Caller, so sincerely, thank you so much. What a fascinating life. I've never talked to someone, I think, who's both so at peace with the simplicity of what you do and it's your daily existence while also being very aware that it's mind-blowing to me. Thank you so much for filling us in. Thank you to everybody who subscribes over at BeautifulAnonymous.com. Thank you to our producer, Andrea Quinn. Thank you to Shell Shag for the theme music. If you want to know more about me, ChrisGeth.com is a great place to keep up to date, especially with my tour dates. Remember, everybody, we've got a voicemail line. If we tape at times that don't work for you, or you feel like you have a story or voice that's not represented on the show, we want to be a home for you. 973-306-4676. Tell us what you want to talk about. 973-306-4676. And of course, if you want to follow the show, you can join the Facebook group at Beautiful Anonymous, the community, or you can follow us on Instagram at Beautiful Anonymous Pod. This week on Beautiful Anonymous Plus, here's some of what you'll get from the 5 questions. If you could travel anywhere in the world to eat something special, where would you go and what would you eat?
Oh, that's a good one. Part of me really likes traveling and trying new things, especially in different cultures. But to go for a surefire one that I've tried, loved, I would go back down to Argentina. And I would just get some empanadas.
I love it. Now, do you remember the coolest geology-related thing you saw during your time in Argentina?
So, yes.
Love it.
There's a couple of them.
Love this. Everyone's buckling up right now. All these weird nerds listening to this show behind the paywall all just leaned in Because every nerd is like, I'm weirdly fascinated and I need to know what just jumped that quickly into his mind. Don't forget to sign up for Beautiful Anonymous Plus at beautifulanonymous.com.